Money FM 89.3. Best of Drive Time. Drive Time with Elliot, Timothy, and Chen Chen. Only on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3. Good afternoon. It is Drive Time with Elliot Danka, Timothy Go, and Chuan Tian Tian. Time now for a Washington report. Is TikTok's time up? The social media company's fate in the U.S. on shakier ground than ever following lawmakers' grueling questioning of TikTok chief executive Shou Zhiqiu last week. We're going to break down some of those headlines as well as others coming out of the United States with Pushan Dit, who is professor of economics at INSEAD. Professor, good afternoon. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Let's talk about TikTok and not the dancing part, but the ongoing U.S.-China feud over this social media app. We already know what went down on Capitol Hill last week, but I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Do you think members of Congress were interested in what Mr. Chu brought to the table, or was it typical lawyering? Answer, yes or no.
So it was a mix of the two. It was a very hostile hearing, okay? But at the same time, it was quite admirable how Shou Zhiqiu was preternaturally calm throughout this hearing. Mm. So there were also some funny moments, especially when one congressman mixed up TikTok with Tic Tac. Now, both are bite-sized, but only one is edible. So I think the big point that the CEO was trying to make was to make the distinction between TikTok in the U.S. and the parent company ByteDance in China, that they are sort of separate entities. So they've also come up with this partnership with Oracle called Project Texas, where they will ensure that the American data is stored in the U.S., monitored by the Americans, and kept away from potential Chinese interference. Members of the Congress, however, did not seem very convinced. They pushed back sharply, implying that there were backdoors through which China can compel to hand over the user data. Mm. So the U.S. has two big areas of concern. One is that the Chinese government can access the data of U.S. users. In fact, last year, ByteDance itself admitted that its employees accessed some user data, including that of journalists in the U.S. and U.K., and there's an ongoing Justice Department investigation. There's also the fear that TikTok, by sort of censoring videos or not taking down fake videos, can influence U.S. politics. And here I think the American politicians are scarred by what happened with the Russian troll farms in 2016. So that's sort of made them quite suspicious. So the federal government in more than half of the states have actually banned TikTok from government devices and networks. And this is the only issue on which I see both the Democrats and the Republicans united.
Mm. You talk about the ban on government devices, right? Is there authority for a wider ban, like a countrywide ban, or do they have to force the sale of TikTok in the United States so it's run by, I don't know, a U.S. entity of some sorts to get more control, I suppose?
Correct. So I don't think they will manage to ban the app. So banning the app runs into multiple problems. First, it would be like the first time in history that the U.S. would have banned an entire media application. But the biggest thing, the second and biggest thing, is it runs afoul of the First Amendment, which is the right to free speech protected by the U.S. Constitution. So any ban will lead to a very messy legal battle that will work its way up to the Supreme Court. And TikTok will actually, my prediction is that they will win. So even if they don't win, they will try all legal avenues, and the issue could take years to resolve. So I don't think a ban is very likely, and the Biden administration is aware of this. So they want the app to be sold to an American company so that the ties to China can be actually cut.
Right.
I also want to note that this is sort of a reversal of sorts. So I find this quite interesting because when we think of U.S. and China and their current tensions, the way we think about it is that China is rapidly catching up in hard power, like in terms of the military, the influence, while lagging behind in soft power. In TikTok, they finally have an item which combines the hard power of data and algorithms with the soft power of dominating the U.S. culture. This makes the conflict much deeper and harder to resolve.
Yeah. You add to that the fact that the Chinese government publicly declaring that it will block the sale of TikTok in the United States. I wonder if they have the power to do that and the potential consequences of such an action?
Yeah, they do have the power to do that. Keep in mind that the Trump administration had tried to ban TikTok back in 2020.
Right.
So what
yes.
China did at that time was they introduced an export restriction, saying this is an export of a technology, and therefore such an export would require its explicit approval. So the Chinese will block, and the Commerce Ministry came out with a very strong statement saying they were going to block ByteDance from selling this technology. So that avenue also is not likely to be feasible. Now, for ByteDance, its most valuable asset is its algorithm, right? The algorithm that powers its recommendations as we scroll mindlessly through TikTok, right? So, and multiple companies like Facebook and Google have some versions of it, but they've not taken off. In fact, many of the U.S. tech companies have actually lobbied to, you know, put some restrictions on TikTok because they find it so difficult to compete with it. Now, put on top of this that the two countries, the U.S. and China, are in a technology race in the next generation industries, it makes this issue very, very difficult to resolve.
Mm. On the note of this technology, right, or entrance of technology, it's a tricky one when you consider 150 million TikTok users, and out of that, probably one third are content creators actually earning money out of it. You look at the past where you've got Cambridge Analytica and the whole Facebook issue, data security, user privacy. Is it really all down to politics to single out TikTok this much?
So there is a big political element to it, right? As I had just mentioned, you know, the antagonism against China unites both the parties, right? But there is an asymmetry there. So TikTok is massively popular amongst the young, right? So not, as you just said, not just as consumers, but also as producers of this creative content. So this, if a total ban, or, you know, would be actually politically suicidal for the Democrats, because the young are part of their core constituency. Last time, the reason that the Democrats actually retained the Senate was actually the young voters showed up in much bigger numbers.
Okay.
The other thing that you mentioned, which also sort of shows how complex this issue is, that is this Cambridge Analytica Facebook scandal. So it's not just about TikTok, right? Facebook users' data was harvested and sold to a British political consulting company. So the U.S. has online privacy problems, which runs far deeper than any single app. Okay, so I think the way forward, therefore, is that the U.S. has to write legislation, not targeting one company, not targeting one app, but think carefully through data security issues, privacy issues, and put this legislation which applies to all tech and all social media companies.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one, you know, a proper tech law framework, although some will argue that it's got to be the right balance and not as strict as the one that's come out of Europe, where you basically can't use any data whatsoever. Professor, if you don't mind, I want to switch gears to a blast from the past. Former US President Donald Trump holding his first major campaign rally in Waco. I think this is his third bid for the White House chair. He has a bunch of criminal charges as well. What are his reasons for choosing Waco for his rally?
The reason why everyone thinks about Waco as being symbolic was because it was the site of this deadly siege which happened 20 years ago between this cult called the Branch Davidian religious cult. So 76 people died in that siege, including four law enforcement officers. Now, the parallel that people see very obviously, that Trump also has a cult-like following amongst a big segment of the Republican base. Now, the Branch Davidians ended in a violent confrontation between the members of the cult and federal law enforcement, and the Trump movement culminated in a violent storming of the U.S. Capitol. So that's why people draw these parallels. But of course, it could be something quite mundane, like Texas is deep red territory and Waco is deepest of deepest red. So where Trump's message of anti-government paranoia, that the deep state is out to get him, resonates really, really well with audiences.
Mm. Professor, I keep asking a lot of experts this question, thinking I'm going to get a different answer, but to my surprise, no. I'd like to get yours. The odds of Trump, you know, being the front runner for that Republican nomination for 2024, does it look like it's going to change?
You know, if I had to put money, I would put money on Trump again. Okay. So, I mean, let me start you off with the numbers. So,
okay.
So 2021, Biden becomes president, right? Yeah. And after storming of the Capitol, after lots of court cases by the Trump legal team, despite this, 30% of Republicans believe that in 2021, not only was Trump the rightful president, but that he's likely to take power sometime in August of 2021. So we have to recognize that Trump is a really unique candidate in U.S. politics. And what keeps him going is this deep, enduring bond that he has with his supporters. Yeah. This is his superpower, basically. Now, in 2016, Trump believed that the conservative movement was so weak that it could be overthrown, that what was pushed by Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr. and Jr., you know, that's not what really animated voters. Things like economic freedom, less regulations, you know, muscular foreign policy. What mattered was actually these cultural issues of loss and identity and respect. And this is what Trump weaponized. Mm. So he basically spoke about immigration, race, and the politics of, of resentment. So which means that the Trump base, you know, they formed a very strong bond with him, and they were willing to overlook all his stints, all his flaws. So the problem that the Republican Party faces is actually not Trump. It's actually their voters.
Right, right. I mean, you talk about his superpower, but, you know, you're looking at 8 years of scandals and investigations and charges. I think his superpower is luck, actually.
So partly it is luck. He is extremely lucky. Yeah. But he has also benefited from this lack of courage amongst the Republican establishment to take him on directly, right?
Okay.
Because this has happened multiple times. They give him a pass hoping that the Democrats will take him down or Clinton will take him down. Or Biden will take him down. They keep giving him a pass, and he realizes this, and he uses everything in his power to make sure that he remains in the center and becomes the nominee of the Republican Party.
All right. I've been speaking with Pushandit, who is Professor of Economics at INSEAD. Professor, I appreciate your time today. Take care and have a great Monday evening.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.